Well, hello everybody and welcome to another episode of Going Downhill. This is Wendy.
And I'm Shelley.
Hello, Shelley. How are you today?
I'm all right and got another cold, so I'm going to, again, sound pretty sexy. Not as sexy as last time, but still sexy.
No.
Yeah, and I have some fun stuff to go on about, and how are you doing?
I obviously don't have as much fun stuff to talk about as you do. I just played, what, 7 games in 2 days, so I'm a little sore today.
Oh, but wow.
I'll live.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, that's a lot of soccer. I was... we had the NORAMs here this weekend, so we had everybody in from all over the place, some Swiss racers, some Czech racers, everybody like NCAA circuit, those people, they all came up. The conditions were so hard because we had a huge warm spell, and then it went down to minus 13 overnight. Honestly, Wendy, it reminded me of
Schladming.
And it was one of those things, half the volunteers, I was like, we're not going to need to sideslip this thing. Like, you couldn't, after all of the race, 113 in the field for first run.
Wow.
And they did not make a dent in this. And all the racers were like, this is great. Do you guys inject the hill? We're like, no.
Welcome to Ontario.
Yeah, it was really great. Some local racers that I really support. Congrats, Briar Jones. You know Briar.
Yeah,
she did really well. Her first NORAM ever, and so she came from bib 81 and came in 37th. So that's pretty good.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So cut her number in half by more.
She's not dumb enough to believe that, though.
Okay, whatever.
But then I was reffing a U16 race on the Friday night. And this is when the temperature was starting to plummet. So the first run happened when it was still light out, and it was a rodeo. Like, the track was so soft. There needed to be so much work. And I'm reffing for men.
Yeah.
Fine. The set was interesting. I mean, the person who set it liked to be one of those like combo into combo things. And so I'm kind of mitigating also that the TD was like, I don't like it when they set combos to combos. And I'm like, well, it's legal and it's fine. So it's skiable. Like, you can't argue. You can't just throw down a problem because you run up to the setter and say, like, I don't like your style.
Yeah.
I mean, we all saw that with Croatia at the Olympics, right?
Yes, we did.
So that was like issue number one. Issue number two, second run comes about, and it is hard as, like, because we put fertilizer down beforehand to hopefully like draw it and make it a harder surface for first run. Second run plummets by 10 degrees. Everything freezes up, and it was so easy. But the problem was that the setter kind of set it still for the softer snow, so it was like a highway. And then the funny thing is like, you know, the dynamics, the coaching dynamics are always really interesting. And so we're at the top, and I look at the first gate, and I'm like, it's straddleable. Like, if you have to be on your inspection, fine, whatever. I would never have set something like this because the first gate was only like 4 or 5 meters from the top. So like, you're just like,
That's close.
Yeah, so it's super close, but it's still legal, so whatever.
Yeah.
And then the next gate, fine. And so I go down, and then I get this call to go back up, and I'm like, okay, what is happening here? And the setter is super upset because some other coach came in behind and moved the first gate.
No.
Yes.
That's not allowed.
No, it's not. It's highly illegal, and it's just bad etiquette. So like, you can get sanctioned for that. So I'm sitting there at the top, and you know, obviously the guy's really upset, and I think people have a bias against his coach. He's a solo coach for a smaller club, so I think people have a bias against him anyway. Been there, done that. It's hard to kind of advocate for yourself. This guy is pissed, reasonably so. And I'm like, yeah, that's not cool. The TD standing with me, the TD for this race was, you know, he's a nice guy, but he's not like the strongest personality. And I'm going just by the rules, because like, whenever there's something that upsets everybody and you're the on the jury, go by the rule book. Go by the rule book and the precedents. And you're like, this is not allowed. So the setter, I said to the setter, I'm like, they have moved your gate. Do you want this to remain moved, or do you want to put it back? This is your course. You get to do what you want. This is the thing. And I have like 4 coaches behind me who are all listening to this because they're the ones who move the gate. But they know that I'm just that little bit bitchy enough that I'm going to like stick by the rule book.
Assertive enough. Assertive.
bitchily assertive. Sure, we can go both ways. Okay. Okay. But, perfect. You know, like, because you have to have confidence in yourself in those roles, because you have a lot of very egotistical, well, not like just, well, there's egos and there's also a lot of strong personalities involved. So anyway, so this guy sits there and finally we look at it and he's like, nah, I guess it will run okay. And I'm like, well, we have to look at the distance to the first gate, 13 meters to the first gate on a very hard course. And I was like, well, they're going to have to set up well. This is like to the rules. It's safe. It's skiable.
Yeah.
So do you want to remain with this? He's like, yeah, I guess I'll just defer to what they moved. And then I just had to say to the other guys, I just said over my shoulder and I was like, guys, bad etiquette, not cool. There's a radio. Call me on it if you think it's a massive problem, not because of your judgment and what you would do. If half the field straddled that first gate, that's on them.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and you can't just change the gate.
No. No, you cannot. That is so, it's like not even just rude, but also against the rules. So finally the guys are like, the TD is looking at me to make the final call.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. I just shut down the whole conversation. And all I said to everybody standing around, and there's like eight people there.
Yeah.
It's just like, the rules have been appeased. The law has been set. Everybody is happy. I'm not hearing about this. Let's go. I want to get home before 9:30. That was all.
Atta girl. So, yeah. Like, wow.
Yeah. It was one of those like interesting, it was a night full of personality. And like that, I find that U16 is always, you would never do that on a FIS course. Also, mm-hmm. I had someone while I was counting and going over the courses, a coach that was not on the jury was about 20 meters behind me measuring every gate. Also not allowed.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it was entertaining. And when, like, I think that people should know that there are these, there are rules for reasons, like why, when the jury declares something or when something is happening, everybody is not privy to jury's decisions immediately, because there's a discussion that happens. And like those discussions can be quite intense amongst the jurors themselves. We had two people protest, one person won their protest, another person lost. So it's just like you have a lot going on in these rules. And U16, I think, is by far the worst, because on a FIS course, people will sanction you. But in U16, yeah, people generally let it slide, but you still have the same amount because there are so many things to qualify for, which I don't like as much in U16 because it puts a lot of pressure on younger athletes. Mm-hmm. With no good reason, because when they get into FIS, there's almost less pressure for the first and second year, except for self-improvement.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was crazy. Anyway, that's my fun story.
Wow. Way more excited than my boring games of soccer. So.
Oh, Wendy, if you were there, you would have been laughing so hard. You would have been like, if you had been chased down the hill with, and this one coach typically does this. And like, if I were younger and less experienced, I think that I would be intimidated. But I was mm-hmm. like, we don't need to be doing this. Like, and also like, to what extent is this going to help you?
And like goodbye all, and have a nice day.
Like, they're all legal. I checked them. Thanks.
Yeah. Just appreciate like your words. Yeah. Goodbye. Yeah.
Not even your words, just your actions. But yeah, I've
my God.
Yeah. And technically in U16, you can sanction people and get people to like get kicked out of these courses. But I'm just there. Like, I don't coach on that circuit. So I was just there literally just reffing because they needed my help.
You handle it very well. I might have been even extra assertive mm-hmm. with that one coach who moved that gate in front of his peers. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So well done.
Yeah. Gotta go by the rule book and yep. Understand what juries are for. And that is what juries are for.
That is indeed.
So.
Yes.
Anyway, going on to local-ish races, we're back in North America because the women got canceled due to snow.
Yeah, nice quick coverage for them. Heavy snowfall canceled both of the Super Gs. So, and that's the sixth speed event for the ladies that got canceled. The sixth one.
All the guys have been, the guys' events seem to be canceled all at the beginning of the season. These events seem to be for the women canceled border of the mid and the end.
So yeah,
I guess that karma's trying to even out the sexes.
I guess. Very nice.
So anyway, Val di Faso is not happening.
No, nicht gut.
Nicht sehr gut. But we do have a lot to cover in the men. We have the GS race on the Saturday, and on the Sunday we have the slalom, and we are in Tahoe. in the United States.
So Tahoe, it was formerly known, well, it's called the Palisades Tahoe, and it was formerly known as Squaw Valley since 1949.
Yeah, why did they change it? Tell me.
Well, as of 2021, the Squaw Valley governing body of the ski area decided that the word squaw is considered a racist and sexist slur.
Why is it sexist? I mean, racist, I can maybe understand because that's coming from an indigenous culture, and I don't really, I'm not going to pretend I know. I don't know. Do you know as like
Well, yeah, I
what
used to
it
get
means?
called squaw
Is
in
it a
junior high.
slur? Oh, I had no
Oh, yeah.
idea.
Oh, yeah,
Oh.
I used to beat the crap out of every guy that called me that.
Good for you,
Yeah.
Wendy. They
Yeah.
deserve it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hit
No,
one guy over the head
I
with a tennis racket. Always felt
mean,
bad.
these are like, this is why I'm like the ignorant white girl here, so that's a teachable moment. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. So, yeah, squaw. So it's totally derogatory. Sexist because it's related only to the females.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so squaw. So, yeah, it's not cool. It's not fun. It's not very nice. So
So
the
Palisades it
Palisades
is.
Tahoe it is. So yeah, so that came from the Washoe tribe from down in those areas was part of naming the new name, which is Palisades Tahoe. So, but you know what's really cool is we actually filmed a movie. We started it before it went tits up, and the word squaw came from Lewis and Clark, the explorers from 1805.
Oh, the ones who went
Yep.
across the United States.
You got it. So that's kind of where it came from. They coined it. Not very nice, those gentlemen. And it was used by the fur trappers and the fur traders and Lewis and Clark, apparently. So it's nice that they have now changed it to Palisades Tahoe. I do thankfully say thanks, guys. That's good. Thank you. And that's over now. We can move on to the races.
Teachable moment done. Now on to
Done,
the
over.
races.
Did you know that the Palisades Tahoe actually hosted the Winter Games in 1960?
I didn't. I
Yes,
knew it
before
was.
my time.
By just a little bit, but
A little bit.
but I did. I did know the Olympics were there. I didn't realize it was that early.
Yeah. Yeah. It was totally that early. And it's like there's 6,000 acres of terrain. There's a few mountains involved there, a couple mountains, Olympic Valley and Alpine Meadows. 6,000 acres of terrain, and then they had to pick this one really offset side hill race run.
Yes, I know, right? So I thought that this was actually interesting because it's not a steep course by any
No,
means, but at
no.
least with the side hill and a couple little bits of terrain, it made it more interesting for sets. So that had it, like, I thought it had something going for it in that way. I mean, I think like I definitely want to ski here at some point. I'd love to go to Tahoe, but probably not going to get there in the next 80 million years because I'm super busy. But I would just like to say, yeah, we have a Norwegian set for our first set, and that was 46 gates, 49 turning gates. Our second set was Peter Phil again, Italy, 46 and 49 gates. The course name is Red Dog. It is a start altitude of 2,304 meters, so pretty high up, and it finishes 1918, vertical drop of 386 meters. It was really nice and sunny, beautiful weather, hard packed snow. 2 degrees at the start and 0 degrees at the finish. So, and then 5 degrees at the start and 7 degrees at the finish. So, just a stunning day.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful, and you can see Lake Tahoe like down there. It's beautiful, and we had a Canadian TD again.
Yes, yeah, we
What's
did.
going on with that? It's awesome, Claude Marquis from Quebec. So that's awesome, getting our Canadian content in there.
Yeah, I've had a few races with Claude. He's a good dude. He
Yep,
probably wouldn't have to
it
put
is.
up with the stuff that I did on Friday
No, probably not.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the course, so the terrain. So
The
you
terrain is,
liked it.
yeah. You didn't?
No.
Too flat?
No. Too flat at the top, too flat at the bottom. In the middle, though, they did have some good terrain and some good rolls. They did have a cool blind gate coming over the pitch, but it's just too flat and too side hill for me.
I mean, I think the side hill is the thing that makes it interesting. It saves it from being absolutely boring. I don't disagree with it's not the most interesting one, but I'm trying to give it the benefit of the doubt. You know, it's a pretty long course. But yeah, it's got the right foot side hill, so that's gonna suck you down, and it did for quite a few athletes.
Yeah. Yes,
So
it did.
I find that the
Yeah.
side hills on this season have been more interesting to watch to see how they also, and especially in the slalom, how they handle some of the combinations in some of the sets. But I definitely think that this was a time to shine for some of the athletes from the smaller countries that maybe don't have some of the experience on the steeps as well. So that kind of made it more of a race in that regard for some kind of people who are just popping in there.
Yep, fair enough. And the one of the hometown, not hometown, but home country favorites was able to get on that podium, River Radamus.
Yes, like super stoked for him to do that. I think that was his first time, was it not?
It was the very first World Cup podium, and yeah, he was super stoked. He started number 10. He was third after the first run. He managed to hang on to that third place, but his run, I told you about the blind bump earlier, where you have to know the line. You have to trust yourself coming in there. And the River nailed it. He was, yeah, he just nailed it. You got to trust yourself. Now he was 1.37 out though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Kristoffersen was second and only 0.12 out, which is actually pretty impressive. But between first and second, Odermatt took it and just killed it as always. But it was really a race for first and second. There was no, like, third onwards was just kind of a different podium altogether in a certain way.
They all get the ribbon.
I know. I think Radamus probably partied up maybe a little bit too much the night before because he didn't finish the first run for
That's true.
the
Hey, Bodie Miller, he can do it, right? Like, whatever. So, yeah. No. So exciting for Kristoffersen. He's had a rough year. He's had 31 GS podiums. Now he's got 32. And it was pretty tight between those two. It made it quite exciting to watch that final run.
Yeah, it was nice. Also, I mean, sometimes I think with Kristoffersen, I'm like, oh, things went well today, so are you going to blame your setup next week or your serviceman? Because like he's been bitching about his setup for quite a while. So when it works out for him, is it because it's the skiing or is it the setup? Like now I'm like, which one is it now? Like if you're kind of throwing stones from glass houses or crying wolf all the time, like what do you think? Because I think he's been skiing. I think later on this season he has been picking it up and he's skiing better, but he's still making mistakes that you wouldn't have seen when, the Hersher, Kristoffersen show was still having. Like he's not as precise. And is that the equipment? I mean, like it's always debatable, but I do think that his inconsistencies definitely are showing that maybe it's more the skier rather than the equipment.
I concur. So, Odermatt, as you
No fight
alluded
there.
to,
Next.
no, totally agree with you. Nailed it. Odermatt. I mean, the guy is phenomenal. He's first after the first run,
Oh my
won
God.
it again.
Let's go. Let's talk about Odermatt for I just want to go through some of the stats because this man has achieved a ton. So, this is his 10th win in a row. He's the third skier to ever do this for 10 successive World Cup victories after the Stenmark did 1978 to 1979 and Anne-Marie Moser-Proll in the women's downhill 1972 to 1974. So he hasn't broken the complete record because Stenmark had 14, Anne-Marie had 11, so he's got a little bit ways to go. But wow, like that is quite amazing.
It
He's
really
won
is.
in yeah he's won in seven different countries previously. United States makes it eight. So, like it's not geographically centered. It's just consistent performance all around. It's all like it's all different conditions as well. Like he's been in soft, he's been in rain, he's been in everything. Like the man's just proving himself to be all around, just really the champion that he has earned, really.
Well, and he's already nailed and clinched his third World Cup overall title.
Yeah. Yes, he has.
Right? Like his third one. That's amazing.
Yeah. I think it's, yeah. He's the only Swiss man to have more Crystal Globes, or the only other guy is Zurbriggen, who had four. So I guess maybe next year that's going to be his
Yeah.
goal.
No, not pair me. He was my favorite. So Odermatt has achieved 20 World Cup wins in GS in seven different countries and now eight.
I just said that.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Oh, let's focus on Perman Zurbriggen. Just reiterating, I agree with you fully. Yes, that's what he does. Yes. Yeah. No,
no,
problem.
It's just impressive. And, you know, when you have that, obviously you're going to be winning runs by a second, which he typically does. I mean, having Kristoffersen kind of come in there, especially on GS, is really quite impressive as well. Usually you think of Kristoffersen. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kristoffersen is a GS skier, but I always think of him more as the slalom champ that he used to be.
Yeah.
So
why isn't Odomat try slalom?
I mean, does he need to? I at the same time, you know, the GS turn relating to the GS turn relating to Super G and like downhill is a little bit more common. That fast pace and also the technicalities and the strategies you take in slalom are slightly different. So it might also be that, like, he's just better at the learning and patience that you have on the longer sticks, and he doesn't need to do the slalom. And also at the same time, maybe he's tired and he doesn't want to injure himself.
Or maybe he should challenge himself in something that he's not going to win every single time he goes out.
I think he's fine just getting all those consecutive wins by choosing what to do. I don't think that I have anything or any criticism of his scheduling.
Fine, he's doing all right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Anyway, should we go? Well, wait, I got to talk about my attack from the back that I have. So from Austria, Lukas Fierstein. Mm-hmm. It's his first time racing in the Palisades. He was 26 after the first run. Start number 56.
Yes.
So he's 26 after the first run. He ended up in 10th place.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool, starting number 56. And starting 26 after the second run, moving up to 10th.
Yeah, I don't That's know. Great. I don't know much about him. Was he ever like an NCAA athlete and maybe had skied here before and knew the hill a little better? Or I don't know.
I think he just rocked it.
Mm. True enough. And I mean, United States, Patrick Kenny, 51 to 24, also very nice.
Yes, yes, he is my next one. Eric Reed didn't finish, bummer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's having a tough go now, I think, the latter part of the season here.
He's been having kind of, I don't think he's been having his favorite season ever.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Started off pretty good and then just ran into some troubles there. So, but we can talk about the slalom.
Sure. I mean, before we do, let's thank our sponsors, Freshwater Distillery, Vocal Marker, and Del Bello, and Helly Hansen. Thank you very much for helping us out.
Thank you.
Helping us help you help us.
Wow. Let me help you. All right.
Sure,
that was from the movie with Tom Cruise.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Help me help you.
Yeah.
No? Okay. All right.
Yeah, I know. We got it. We got it. Thanks.
Okay, all right, I'm done.
Fine. All
right. Slalom.
I like this hill for slalom better, but I think that it was the sets that made it more interesting than anything else. What do you think?
Ixnay on the slalom A. So, again, I found it too flat at the top. Not a bad
kind
of
middle. Oh, the top was, yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, just tuck or something. I don't know. And then I just found the bottom, again, kind of flat, and it wasn't. I mean, they did throw in a bunch of horizontal verticals, you know what I mean, to try
yes.
to mess you up.
Yeah.
And there was the hairpin that kind of had a bump a little bit before mm-hmm. that. So you got, you know, so I see what they're trying to do here, but what can you do on the flats? Not much.
No, but they did have a lot of offset, which I liked. So you had to actually direct the energy of the ski over as opposed to just down. And you had to be very precise because of that side hill as well with that offset. So I thought it was actually all right. The course name again, Red Dog, 2,113 meters, finish altitude 1918, vertical drop 195. We had 65 turning gates with Thierry Meinet, I'm going to say from Switzerland. Second setter was Pavel Grasic from Croatia. It again, same conditions, same temperatures, almost like, you know, anywhere between 2 and -2 and 7 and 8 degrees for second run. It was super nice, beautiful, sunny, hard packed snow. You really had everybody from everywhere here. We had 20 NSAs on this one with 69 competitors. So pretty nice.
Yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah. And, the first set was, I think, a little more conservative. Again, like you had that offset, but it didn't have those same verticals that were kind of more off-hill. Going mm-hmm. across, and the second set I thought was really, really nice. I mean, one thing I think that we had to think about is also how long this course was. It was 65 turning gates, right, for first run. That's pretty long. Like, that's going to be tiring. Long. Especially when you're trying to, like, push forward because you don't have that momentum from the steeps.
And especially when you party the night before because you're on the podium. That's hard to do the next day in the slalom.
Yeah, right? I find that, you know, like, if you were grindy at all in this course and you did any work below the gate, you were done.
Yeah.
Your race was over because you have nowhere to make that up because it's too flat.
Yep. Yep. You got to be really dialed in.
Yeah. And did you ever know, like, so Danielle Yule had a black armband on. Do we know what that was for?
No.
We should check that one out.
Yes. Okay. I will do it. I did notice some people wearing the wrong, losing their bibs.
So when you get to the race and sometimes you'll have an athlete that loses a bib or there weren't enough bib numbers. I don't think I've seen this in a World Cup.
Okay. U12. Sure.
Yeah, I know.
U10. Sure.
Someone doesn't return their bib, so they don't have number, you know, 33 or whatever. So they just take a 195, they flip it inside out, or they just say number 33 starting with bib 195 or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah.
So weren't there three bibs missing?
Yes.
Come on, men.
Did you see that they just took a Sharpie, though, and they just wrote three?
Yeah. I saw that. I'm like, was there not another number three? Someone if else I were, was a number three.
I mean, like, if I were a sponsor, because the sponsors are on the bibs, like, I'd be like, what happened there? Like, someone getting hammered the night before the team captains meet. But even for World Cup, it's like every race gets a different bib because people give away their bibs.
Well, they would have gotten them all at the captain's meeting. So they would have their bibs. What happened, guys, between the first and second run?
They got hammered with River the night before and lost their bibs after the draw.
Lost their bib, traded it for something with a fan. I don't know. Yeah, anyway. guys, these days.
Yeah, I was sad to see, AJ Guinness, so he was the Greek-American guy. Yeah. He was skiing really well, went out. So those combinations really killed people, and especially when you had that pin into the weird off-hill vertical that came down. That really killed a lot of people. Either what it did was they went out right before it or in it, or what it did is it made their exit, they didn't exit with enough direction, so that they went to the left footer, they were late, or just couldn't make the next couple gates, and they got twisted.
Yeah, it did come at them pretty fast.
Yeah, and then also, like, getting into it to begin with, they had to kind of make a really nice kind of almost like an uphill turn almost to get right back into it. It's interesting.
Maybe that part was interesting. You're like... On one interesting part.
Well, one person that found it interesting is Linus Strasse from Germany. So he came in third.
Yeah, but he was in first after the first run, so he did not like the second run quite as much.
No, he had the 24th fastest time, so he was 24th slowest time anyway.
Yeah. So he ran here in 2023, he was 10th. Mm-hmm. So, you know, solid result from last year. He has had 5 World Cup victories in his lifetime career of racing to this season. So he is one of the top guys, but... Yeah, to be first after the first run, then end up being behind by 0.38 kind of sucks.
And I feel kind of badly for him because Germany is not really known for its slalom per se. So he could have been the third male skier for Germany to win more than 2 World Cup slaloms in a single season. To only win 2 is like too bad guy.
Yeah, too bad. But congrats on the third, Linus.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, at least he got the podium, and he can cry himself on the plane home and have some alcohol drinks there.
Okay, there we go.
And then, because they're staying in the United States, I guess.
Huh. Oh yeah. Oh, that's right.
Next race.
Don't go home. Second place, Clément Noël.
Yeah, again, like, not a great, none of these top guys, and there was a bit of a groove in the track, and I have to wonder if that's also what threw them off. It was, he had the 21st fastest time. None of the athletes on our podium were even in the top 10.
Yeah.
For their second run. Like, and that's, I thought that was actually quite impressive.
Yeah. Well, last year here, Clément Noël, he was back in 2023, he was third. So we got third last year. So he did move up a spot to second. He has had 10 World Cup victories. So that's a large number, really. But he was 0.28 out.
I didn't think that I feel really badly actually for someone who just ended up for Steen Olsen on this one. I thought he was going to do really well and he did not. I was very sad. But our winner was Manuel Feller. So he had he was third after the first run and then 17th. But I mean, like, he just snuck in there. He won it by 0.28. And he was just like pretty aggressive and pretty clean. Obviously, not the fastest. And he made some definite mistakes, like getting a little twisted here and there. But like otherwise, like, he just kind of pulled it out of there. I didn't think he was, didn't think it was going to happen for him when I saw his run. But
yeah, it wasn't super on the edge. Like he's usually like his technique is just always balls out, right? So to me, it kind of even looked a little bit not being held back, but just trying to be more solid or something.
A little conservative.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. But he did become the first man to win four World Cup slaloms in a single season since Hirscher won five in 2018, 2019.
Yes.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and Feller has the lead of 164 points prior to this on Strasser in second place for slalom. So, I mean, Strasser's going to be pissed. It's going to be a real race to see who can at least get that.
Oh, my God. Slalom, yeah. Right? Exactly. So. Well, Feller's won three times this year, right? So it's a, I don't know. I mean, he's always, people like him, people don't like him. It doesn't matter. He's just still going to, he doesn't care about the haters. He's still going to do the best that he can. Last year, he was only 13th in the Palisades.
Yeah.
So, marked improvement.
Right. And then I think Clément Noël is going to be chasing things as well. I felt a little badly for him because, you know, he's had 10 World Cup victories in general, but not since the 24th of January has he won one. So at the night race in Schladming last year. So he's got to be a little sad about that. So close.
Well, he's probably more sad about the race he was winning.
Oh, yeah. And then it got canceled.
That got canceled because the heavy rain after 31 starters. You're like, pretty sure I got this. And then unfortunately the weather was just so brutal it wasn't safe for the athletes to continue, so the race got totally canceled and he was winning after 31. So that's a bummer.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously. I thought that it was a, like, there was some interesting one. You had two British and two Belgian athletes make it in the top 30, which doesn't typically happen. The Belgian Sam Mays, as we know, can kind of be a little bit crazy, did not pay off in his second run. Just totally got twisted out of it on some of the combinations. And, you know, Billy Major starting, he was starting first, obviously, because he was 30th. And he just came into it. I don't know if this is one of those cases, like, from a mental perspective where he was a little overexcited mentally, but yeah, he just went balls out and got caught in the same trap that everybody else was going to get caught in. So he kind of was a predictor of how the course would run for that first half.
Yeah, well, the tactics in those one specific spot, maybe two spots, right? You gotta, you know, balls out on the flats for sure, but yeah, you gotta bust in those technical skills for the crazy parts. But Belgium, so Marchand, he started number 40 and finished 18th. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely seen Marchand in the 30s, top 30s before. It's been a while. So again, like, flatter course, just kind of better on those off-footers. Yeah. And kind of skied a little bit more conservatively just to kind of think, get it done and pop her in there for the points. And that was fine. Popov was super exciting to watch as always. He was recovering after recovery. That was a fun one. Dude. Just on the heels, on the toes, on the whatevers. And he's just so fast. Like, there's a couple times where I'm like, he must be all core strength, because sometimes I'm like, how did you possibly get your feet under you that fast?
Yep. I know. Like, he's just so quick. Quick. Unfortunately, Eric Reed didn't qualify for the second run on this one. And he's really just got to go, you know what, forget it, take a breath and just refocus and get back into the game that he can play.
Yeah, I mean, it's called a rut for a reason. They're not the easiest to get out of.
Wow. That was actually pretty good. Ruts in the course, ruts in life. Yeah.
But good come analogy. On, but it's true. Like, it's one of those things where, you know, like, is it a mental thing? Is it also maybe a setup? Is it equipment thing? And also, it could be all three. You never know. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not in his brain or in his, you know, we're not his trainers, so we can't really see what's going on. But definitely, it's not going to be good for his morale, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and now he's by himself for these races, right? The mm-hmm. Justin athlete, he didn't go to these ones. And in a way, I'm kind of like, well, it would maybe have been nicer or a better approach to, for a kid who's coming up and starting out in World Cup, to maybe not throw him into the wolves in Europe and maybe start him in the North American World Cups or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, start him in the North American World Cups, but there also still is, you know, NORAMs and good races around there, and just kind of finish the season mm-hmm. on a high note by yeah. throwing him more into those, because he would be an excellent point holder for those races mm-hmm. anyway, and he would still be in yeah. contention. He can still qualify. He's not overqualified for them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, that's about all I got to say about the slalom.
Pretty much that's all I have to say as well. We've got want to ski at Tahoe. Love to ski at Tahoe. Let's go to Tahoe, Wendy.
I haven't been to Tahoe, so.
Let's go.
Do you think I'll get a discount with my status card?
No.
Damn it.
Can Canadian status cards work in the United States?
Yes.
Do they?
Actually.
Oh, I didn't know.
I can cross the border with my status card.
Oh, interesting.
I suppose I can bring back more alcohol, but you know how much I drink, which is like jack shit. So it's like, can I bring back my couple Smirnoff Ices? I don't know. But anyway,
I'll give you some to carry for me.
Don't announce that on public social media. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a little too late, I think.
Okay. Tell me what you want.
I'll tell you when we're in Tahoe, baby.
All right.
Anyway, well, for this week, I mean, it's been a short one. We didn't have a lot going on this weekend. So next week we'll be back in the United States. And I think we're also in Norway at the same time. So Norway for speed for the ladies. United States for the men, and we will be back then to report on what's going on. Hopefully we'll have some better weather for the ladies.
Wow. Better leather. What? I mean, I like leather. Okay.
I'll anyway. Send on that note.
On that note.
I've been Shelly.
And I've been Wendy.
Keep your tips up.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Called that coach out who moved the gate.
Oh, by name?
By name, but by visual, like, hey, you can't do that.
If you I didn't see him.
Better offer. Oh, okay.
I didn't see him do it, so that's why I got called back up, because he had moved it. So, okay. Like, that was one of those things where apparently someone was trying to get me on the radio, but I was on the jury channel, so I don't know why. My radio isn't great for that course, though, I'm not going to lie. But it was hilarious. There was 20 DNFs and 20 DSQs for both men's and ladies. So it was like a good third of the field.
Oh my God. Was it always on the same gate?
After the first round. No, so the trickier part of the set for the men's was at the bottom, and everybody was like, can you do that? I'm like, it's legal, it's fine. It was kind of a backwards pin into a flush, which kind of led it, because they had to go across the hill to make room for stuff. And it was an interesting set, and I actually like sets for U16 like this, because at this point they can think a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if they're dumb and they don't understand the entries and exits, like, that's on them for inspection. So the coaches were like, I don't know about this. We had a couple complaints, and I'm like, it's legal, I'm letting it stay. Also, like, inspect it properly and get your athletes to think about it. So that one, there was only two, I think, DSQs for the trickier part of the course. And I think it's because it freaked so many people out that they really focused on it. They all screwed up at the top. There was a pin at the top that came at you pretty fast, and they just ran it so direct, and were just not on it, and they just... And it was soft, so it ended up being also like a rodeo at the top on the pitch. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, you're contending also with, when you have that late line, you get bucked around, especially in those conditions. And they just ended up being late. And, like, you know how those ski, like, a lot of those guys ski is, you know, back and inside. Yeah. And see you later. But it would be like, every once in a while, I'd be like writing on my list, like DNF or whatever, like, because you have your list with you, right? So I'm like writing DNF, and Yoshi was the ref for the women's, and because we were both super busy, we just kind of covered each other. She's like, 39's out, like 39 abandoned, 40 abandoned, 41 abandoned.
Oh my God.
And then you get like three that go down, and then you'd be like,
maybe you should say number 7 finished. Yeah, number right? 12 finished.
Well, and then also the one thing is that the starter wasn't very well experienced. So, I mean, it's a good race, U16, like U14, U16. It's good to get them kind of started. But she kept on calling clears from the top instead of clears from the bottom. Oh. So it'd be like, we'd be like a start stop. And then they'd be like clear at the top, and then she just like sends someone, and we're like, or there was like,
clear at the top.
So after first run, I was like, can we clarify that clears come from the bottom and we work our way up the hill to the top, please? And she's like, yeah, no, and everybody was really nice, and it actually ran really well. But that inexperience, because the first night would be like, the bottom's like, someone would be like, clear at the top, someone's like, clear at the bottom. I'm like, clear in the mid pitch? Like, what? the protocol exists for a reason, right? Like, so that you know, like, you don't just go. And then I called one stop start, and one of the guys who's one of the coaches on the hill, he comes up to me and he's like, who keeps on calling stop starts? I'm like, that's the starter calling the stop starts. And I only called one because there was someone just yard-staled and there was shit all over the course. And so I called a stop start. He's like, why are you always calling this cop? I'm like, I know we all sound the same because we're women, but it's not me.
Well, I'm the one with the bitchy tone. So, a little different.
Yeah. So anyway, so he apologized. So it was pretty funny. But yeah, it was I was like, and the starter kept on calling all the some abandons. And I was like, what is, like, I don't know. Anyway, it was just, it came down to that inexperience, so I kind of had to explain what the rules were. I mean, it was fun, and it worked out in the end, and the race was fine, and everybody was happy, but it was just one of those things where you're like, yeah, there's a couple of, and, like, things ran smoothly, as smooth as it could in those circumstances, but, yeah.
Good times.